I'm Jamie Hurst, and for the MSU Denver Alumni Association, we're excited to bring you Bird Talk, a podcast about our alumni, their careers, and their lives.
I have the best job. I really do. I love my job so much.
I don't know. I'll contest with that.
Yeah. Mine's pretty great, too. I mean, we're here on a Tuesday afternoon drinking Dr. Pepper and chatting about sports. It's
yeah,
a pretty good job,
with our
too.
Sponsor, Dr.
Yeah,
Pepper.
Exactly. Today's guest is Alyssa Svalberg. Alyssa is a 2018 graduate of the Human Performance and Sport Program, where she earned a degree in sport management. A stalwart member of the Roadrunners Volleyball Program from 2014 to 2017, Alyssa finished her career with a second-team All-RMAC honors in 2017. After a season that saw her compile her career-best 70 kills, 210 digs, and 1,232 assists. After graduating cum laude and earning the Sport Management Student of the Year Award in 2018, Alyssa went on to join Special Olympics Colorado, where she was a project manager and helped raise over $1.2 million for the local Colorado program while organizing an international conference with over 1,500 attendees. Today, she is the Assistant Director for Facilities at Gold Crown Foundation, a nonprofit organization founded by former MSU Denver trustee and Denver Nugget Bill Hanslick that provides basketball, volleyball, golf, and enrichment programs to more than 15,000 youth annually. Since graduating, Alyssa has stayed very active in the Roadrunner community, serving as a member of the MSU Denver Sport Management Advisory Board of Directors, participating in the annual MSU Denver Women in Sports panel. She's an Alumni Association board member, and of course, still comes back to campus to cheer on the red and blue at volleyball matches. Her impactful engagement awarded her a 10 Under 10 Award in 2022, and we are delighted to recognize her as the 2024 Alumni Volunteer of the Year awardee at this year's Alumni Award Luncheon during homecoming. Alyssa is a Roadrunner through and through. Welcome to Bird Talk.
Thank you so much for having me.
Super excited to have you here, and great to see you in person. And
thank you.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to be here. I love, obviously, coming back and seeing Metro, so it's so great to be here.
It's awesome. And we were talking before we start, well, we were recording, but before you'll start hearing it, our attentive fan base, that you were here for the Colorado premiere this weekend.
Yes, I was here all weekend. It was a long one.
It is a long
super
one.
Fun, yeah.
I was glad to see that our squad, for those of you that don't know, our Colorado premiere is really one of the most premier, if not the most premier, volleyball tournament that is facilitated kind of preseason for Division II athletics. It brings the best programs across the nation. I remember the years that Concordia was like, what, back-to-back-to-back-to-back
yeah.
national champions.
Oh, and yeah.
Playing at this tournament, we see West Texas A&M every year, mm-hmm. who I love to hate because they are so good and deserving. And everything I've ever heard about that program, even from our athletics directors and Coach Glenn and some of the girls on the team, is that they're a great program. They're very respectful kids. The fans create an excellent environment. I just love to hate them because mm-hmm. I'm so tired of handing them trophies in our own facility.
Oh, yeah. It's so true.
It is. It's one of those rivalries that has really stood the test of time, and it's been fun to watch. But this weekend, women's volleyball, our squad finished third. Mm-hmm. One upset against Chaminade, which was a bummer. But you were there for all of it, and you were saying, what, like 19 games because everything was going 4 or 5 sets?
Yeah. I think on Saturday it came out to be 19. Friday, I lost count, to be quite honest. There was only 3 matches, so a little less. But yeah, the Premier's such a great tournament. It's so fun to obviously, as a volleyball player and lover, to just watch it all day. And it's just great to see everybody's different styles and tempos. And it's a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, you alluded to it, but West Texas has just been such a contender the last couple of years. They won a national championship a few years back. So it's great to see our girls compete with it. You know, we've always been a great top 20 team, but I think the last 5 years, it's even stepped up quite a bit. So Jenny does such a great job with that program. And it's really fun to see them really contend for a national championship. And it's awesome to watch. So it's a lot of fun. And I love our whole little squad at the sport table. You know, I've worked with them. Thomas works next to me. We've worked together for like 8 seasons now, I think. So we all have our own groove we go into, and it's a lot of fun.
What do you do? Are you libero tracking? Because that's it. When I get stuck when I get stuck at the table, I've always wanted to libero track because it's the world's easiest job.
It is. I have the best job. And I know there's some jealous people, I think, because a lot 100%. Of people have to work a lot harder than I do.
Yeah,
at
they're
that
counting
table.
Digs, they're counting errors.
Yes.
And you're just like, nope, she came in. Yep, that's the
yes.
right time.
So I love it. You know, I've done scorebook once, and I think I told Rob, like, hey, I'm never doing that again. So sorry, but always happy to libero track. So it's a great job. I love watching it. I'd be here anyway, probably watching it or watching online. So it's so fun to be able to help out with it.
I once sat in to do a men's basketball game because they were short on people at the table, and I got put on the shot clock. And I was like, okay, that's fine. Like, that's not a big deal. There's a lot of pressure on the shot clock. So with the shot clock, then I was also controlling the horn for subs. Mm-hmm. The end of the game, this is when Coach Ball was our coach here. Thankfully, I have a good relationship with Coach Ball, like as an alum and as somebody that I'd worked with for years. So afterwards, I was like, I am so sorry. Let me know how many beers I owe you because I almost blew the game for them. It was like the last 30 seconds to last minute, tight game back and forth, like point for point. We're at the foul line. And so usually when someone's at the foul line, like you press the button after their first shot and they get in. But for some reason, like I must have missed it or it was a 3-point foul attempt. And so I pressed it right as the guy has the ball, like getting ready to shoot. And I was like, oh, no. Thankfully, he made the shot and it didn't hit anything. But I got the glares of death from like everybody sitting at that table. Like, how dare you? I'm sorry. I'm an amateur here.
There's a lot that goes on with the score clock that nobody would ever know. I had to do it during the COVID season, which was, you know, we all were having such an odd time to begin with. And then during the volleyball matches, there was like no one in there. We had to wear masks. Like it was like me and like, I don't know, three other people at the score table. So just very odd, you know. They do it on Sunday morning, which was also completely different than it had ever been. So it was like very quiet in there. So there was one morning I forgot to add the score and oh my gosh, I never heard the end of that. So I, yeah, don't like doing the score. The score clock is where I sit out. It's, so libero is perfect for me.
Yes. It's 100% the best route. Well, thank you for that little digression, but I guess not too far off topic. All of our Bird Talk listeners, you know, we bring in our alums and we talk through kind of their story, how they got here. And I would imagine for you coming as a traditional student right out of high school, it was volleyball driven.
Yeah, it was very volleyball driven. Another thing that really drove it was my whole family has gone here, not just like my sisters and my parents, but like all my cousins, really everybody has gone here. So, you know, I was telling Ruby earlier that when I was 15, 16, I was so set on leaving Denver and really wanted to leave and go out of state. And as I got older, I just really wanted to stay in state and wanted to stay close to family. I remember I had an offer from Adams and my family acted like I would like be moving to Denmark or something. Right. And it was like a 3-hour drive. So I was so happy when Debbie and Gavin was his name that recruited me, came to me. It was such a cool environment getting to stay so close to home, but also being, you know, a little bit away at, for some people, that's like their work commute. So it's not too far. My mom actually works down here. So she'd always be like, we're on the same commute every day. But it was great. It was very volleyball driven. And then I just loved the campus. You know, I came for a visit with Joe Q, who for those of you who know him, he's just the greatest ever and such a big volleyball supporter too, which is awesome. So when I first came, I wanted to do my degree in nutrition. And so he actually helped me kind of go through like the details of all that. And after meeting with him and seeing the campus and loving the city life, I just knew it was for me. It was really fun that my whole family had come here too.
Oh, sure.
So, you know, one of my sisters is a teacher from here and the other one got a criminal justice degree. And then, like I said, my parents as well. So it was kind of fun to continue that, but then also have a whole different twist of a kind of a major that's not really this big thing or hadn't been at that time. That's kind of a newer major, I should say. And then also getting to be a student athlete was very different. So
yeah, but what a great family trajectory. I think about that all the time in terms of legacy. And I wish that I could have had that experience, I think, as a college student. I was very fortunate that college was always something we talked about, but my mom didn't go to school right away. She earned her associate's degree and then had transferred at some point, but then it wasn't part of her family's culture to go to school. Like, I always joke that she'll tell the story about how she was the valedictorian of her high school. She's one of seven kids in an Italian immigrant family. Valedictorian of her high school had an offer to go to school pretty much free of charge, I think, based on their financial status and some scholarships at the University of Arizona. And when she went to her dad, my grandfather, and said, like, oh, I have this opportunity, he was like, well, you can't leave. Who's going to raise the kids below you? You know, and it's one of those things that I think is an all too real of a story for a lot of families when you're a first generation college student. And so thankfully, she stuck around, got her associate's degree, kind of worked in education for a bit, but then met my dad. And so then it was just that natural, like, okay, now we get married and we have kids and we start this family. I keep trying to get her to come back to MSU Denver and just finish her degree because she did a few more semesters at Cal State Los Angeles, at Cal State LA. And so I know she's close. And I know if there is a school that would take her work experience and her transcripts from, I don't want to say how many years ago, right? It would be MSU Denver. Yes. It would be like, yep, here's how you do it. And I think she's just at the point where she's like, not, it's not a priority for me anymore.
She
has to.
It would be so cool.
It would be so. I tried to do it when I was in class because I was like, Mom, we can graduate together.
Yes.
This will be awesome. Aww. And she was like, yeah, I don't think so. But I do think about that when you think about the legacy, and especially here at MSU Denver, we have so many students that story is very similar where it's like, oh, well, my dad went there or my cousin went there or my uncle or my brother or sister. It's got to build such kind of an excitement that when you finally get there, and then the added component of you getting to put on a jersey that says, like, yeah, I get to represent this, had to have been really cool, not just for you, but for your family as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really cool. They have some good stories, too, about how the campus has changed.
Oh, sure.
They have some really funny ones. They'll talk about, I think it's where, I don't even think it's Einstein's anymore. I think, is it that Mercantile?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They say that there used to be a bar downstairs, mm-hmm. and they were on a beer league softball team, and then they would always go to that bar afterwards. So they have, like, all these fun little stories that they have, and then all their siblings and stuff, the ones that did go to college, all came here as well. So they know the campus probably better than I did
most of
my
us,
first
probably.
Couple years. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that is too fun. One of the things when I think about your volleyball career that I think is unique, that's worth chatting about, is kind of that unique opportunity you had to be recruited by and play for Debbie Hendricks, mm-hmm. who is one of my all-time favorite people that I've ever met here. I think Debbie was actually might have been the first person that I met at MSU Denver, even before I worked here, because mm-hmm. my wife started about 6 months before I could get a job here. So I came out to visit that fall, and I think I might have actually even been interviewing here. And she was like, well, we're going to this volleyball game. So I'm like, okay, go watch the volleyball team. Had no idea how good the volleyball team was. So that was a fun thing to be able to watch. And then afterwards, I met Joe Q. And Debbie and a bunch of us went, I think, across the street to Brooklyn's and got a drink after the game. And so Debbie was one of the first people I chatted with. And I was like, oh, you're a different level of volleyball expertise, passion for an institution. I think at that point in time, she was probably in about her 10th or 11th season. I think she had, what, like 16 seasons here? Mm-hmm. I mean, all-time winningest coach at MSU Denver, although Jenny's right on her heels.
Yeah.
She's put together some incredible seasons in her first 6-7 years. But such a sense of program. And you could tell that that wasn't just a team you were on. That was a part of a program that probably formed a lot of who you are as a person, right? And then in the middle of that, you get a transition. Jenny Glenn comes in. Again, wonderful hire. And I always think about the person that comes in after somebody who is an icon and a legend at the program. And I think of how hard that can be because you're trying to continue the success, continue the culture, but you want to do it your way. Or just inherently as a coach, you have a different way of doing things. But she's done an incredible job of kind of piecing that together. And I love how closely she's kept Debbie still in the mix as well.
Yeah.
The fact that Debbie gets to come and take games, that she's back all the time. It's been done so beautifully. It should be a masterclass on like how to transition coaches. As you had mentioned, you know, Gavin and Debbie recruited you. You're here. You're in the space. And then there's this big shakeup. What were you thinking at that point in time? And was there that, oh, my God, do I transfer? Do I leave? Were those conversations or thoughts running through your head at all? Or was it just kind of like, oh, here we go, new challenge?
Yeah, it was a very unique situation that I feel like we maybe didn't realize until now being outside of it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, I guess that doesn't happen very often, as silly as that sounds. I think for me, it was kind of more of, okay, this is a new challenge. You know, I think everyone coming into college athletics from high school has a little bit of a, I don't want to say reality check, but you kind of do when
you
it comes to playing
do.
Time. And, you know, I'll give her a very big shout out. I was behind somebody that's an All-American, one conference player of the year. Brandi Tor was so awesome. So the timing of when I came in, not so great for me, but wonderful for Brandi. So following in her footsteps, you know, I wasn't getting as much playing time as I was used to. And it was very difficult to adjust to. I think when Debbie told us she was retiring, we were all so taken aback. We honestly had no idea that that was even on her radar. At least from my end, I didn't. So of course, you know, there's the fear of some coaches come in and they really clear house of the whole program, of the whole staff. So we didn't really know what to expect. And at that point, we had Dr. Grant here as our athletic director, and he did a really fantastic job of making sure we were involved. And I think Metro, you know, they've been through a lot of hiring in the last probably 5-10 years for coaches. They have done a great job of always putting the student athletes first, and always there's always like a student representative. So one of our teammates was on the hiring committee and was able to see the candidates and be able to give us some information of what was coming in. And then Jenny, you know, coming in, it really was the perfect scenario, just like you said, of coaches that could have came in. She not only made it a point to keep the culture, but to expand on it and even include even more. So in our locker room, there's a whole alumni wall where when you graduate, you put your fingerprint. There was one year, I think it was our junior year, she actually brought in like a bunch of old alumni to inspire us. And all of them had really cool different stories. You know, we had one who played with Amy. I can't think of her name, but she came back as an older student athlete.
Yeah.
And so they brought in these different perspectives of, hey, enjoy this while you can. And I thought that was really cool. I think they do such a great job of integrating that. But you're absolutely right. You know, Jenny has just done such a seamless job and created, you know, even more of an extreme culture here of volleyball. And the volleyball program has always been something to be proud of. So I also have known Jenny, this is a little behind the scenes secret.
Ooh, that's what we do here on Bird Talk.
Yeah, right. I've actually known the Glens forever. So I played for her sister, Carrie, in high school. And then my sisters are a little bit older than me. So they had Carrie, her sister, in high school. And Jenny would help out with Grandview's program. So I actually knew them from going to summer camp when I was like 7 and 8 years old.
Very cool.
And then Patty Childers actually came back, who was my coach at Grandview and worked with the Glens. She actually came back our senior year and was our volunteer assistant coach. So it kind of all came full circle, which was really, really fun. So, you know, the Glens as a family are so great. And you'll always see Michelle and Carrie at all the games, her sisters. And it's just a great, great group. So it was really cool getting to experience both coaches, you know, very similar, but also very different coaching styles, which is hard to adjust to. But it was great. It was really cool to see kind of that transition.
Yeah, I also think that it's unique that it happened when it did before all of this kind of NCAA portal stuff. But this idea that students are looking at what's best for them economically rather than what is the best academic fit, what is the best cultural fit. I think what gets reflected in the news for most people is what happens at the Division I level, which is, oh, new coaching, I'm going to tank the whole team, tell people they got to go. I mean, I think of even Coach Prime, you know, I mean, he came in and turned over, what, 3/4 of a 110-person roster and is still talking through that, right? We were very fortunate to be able to have that threaded needle through all of that to maintain not just the integrity of the program, but the success that's happened too. And the quality of the young women that are currently student athletes and the ones that have graduated in this time has not skipped a beat. And so that's just been really fun to watch. As somebody that appreciates and loves and like lives in the Division II space, that I believe it is the best, truest form of college athletics because you're getting the students that are focused wholeheartedly on the two reasons that they're here, which is school and sports. And you get them more invested in the community. I mean, I think through all the community service, especially that the volleyball team does and how active you guys are in that space, it is the truest and purest form of collegiate athletics for me. And to see that that didn't skip a beat and in fact has even grown and blossomed more has just been really fun to watch as a spectator. So thanks for being a part of that.
Yes, of course. You know, that's something I know so many people treasure about Jenny too, is her loyalty to all of us during that time. And it was never a question once she was hired if we would be here. She was very accepting of everybody. And you're saying that's not always the case. So we're so, so thankful for that. And then coaches too, our whole coaching staff was able to stay, which was awesome. And that's something that I always really admired about her. So we were super lucky. And I think Metro in general does a pretty good job of that usually.
They do. I know we talked a little bit about Amy Watanabe, who you played with. Did you play with Amy or did she was always
play.
A coach?
Yeah, she was always my coach. Yeah.
But that continuity has been super helpful too, where it's somebody that understands the past, that has been here, been through the coaching changes and now has a very prominent role on Jenny's staff. And so I just think it's great. And I think it's one of those highlight, like spotlight programs at MSU Denver that if we just looked at and isolated, said they're doing all the things right for not only who we are as an institution, but for what could realistically look like a microcosm for how the rest of the institution could amplify its efforts in certain places. When you look at the graduation rates, the retention rates, the academic support and success that your team has, the community service involvement, just the presence on campus, all of those things, like just take a look at volleyball, athletics as a whole, but specifically that volleyball program and say, if we can replicate that in other areas on campus, man, would we have the most thriving, exciting place to be.
Truly, yeah. There's always a sign that says Jenny Glenn for president, and nothing could be truer. Like, she could truly run this country so well the way she runs the volleyball team. We have pillars we follow that are, you know, like one of them's integrity. If you do something, you own up to it, whether it's you didn't do the reps right or whether it's a bigger issue. There's a lot of different pillars like communication, stuff like that. Real life lessons is what it is. And people behind the scenes don't get to see how much work we put in and how much work Jenny and Amy and Caden put in. We also get a book every year that we kind of have our slogan for the year of. So like ours was chop wood, carry water. And it basically was, you know, you repeat the same things over and over again until they become mindless. And I can't tell you how many lessons volleyball taught us. And I think that's such a great thing about sports. But Jenny and Amy specifically really, really build you as a person, which is so great.
I agree. So when I think about that, like I think about your experience that you've had on the court and even just the things you've said about the life lessons, because again, that's if you've listened to any of these podcasts or just know me as a human, I'm always like, no, sports builds character and it teaches you how to win. It teaches you how to lose with grace. It teaches you a bunch of intangible things like when to lead, right? When to follow, teaches you how to deal with failure, right? It also teaches you how to win gracefully, all those things that we can talk about. And so I'm a huge advocate for especially youth participation in sports. I don't know that competitive sports necessarily at the highest level need to be for everybody. I think when we get to a certain level, you got to turn something on in your brain that's like, no, I still want to actually put my body through that, my mentality through this, all of that. There's a conscious choice there. But I think youth sports are fantastic. When I think about your experiences, kind of your philosophy on that, couple that with a sport management degree, and then you find yourself working in youth sports. Mm-hmm. Is it just the perfect fit? And is that what you always wanted to do? Or did you just land there because it's naturally kind of the things you care about?
Yeah, it is the perfect fit. And it kind of was, I don't want to say by chance, but I kind of hinted at it at the beginning. I came here with wanting to go into nutrition for my degree.
And then you realized you had to take math and science and you said, nah, I'm good.
Yes, that was part of it. One was my bio class. Yeah. I was just like, you know what? This is kind of hard. And then the other one was they would say that the match rate for internships was 40%. And as most people do, I did a lot of growing during college. And I think even though I was like a pretty strong personality, I was a little timid my freshman year. And that scared me so bad. I was like, this is crazy. So it started to scare me. I also used to work at Super Target. I managed a Super Target, which Amy loves that fact about me and brings it up any chance she gets.
Do you still have the khakis and the red polo, though?
Or? You know what? I had to get rid of red. I can't. When I bought my MSU Denver red sweatshirt, that's the first red I've bought
Fair
since.
Enough. But we have a staff member here who wears khakis pretty much on a daily, and he just told me the other day. He was like, yeah, I was wearing this polo, and it's his red MSU Denver polo, but it doesn't say MSU Denver, but he wears red. He goes, I wore this and accidentally went to Target, and someone asked me if they could help me find XYZ, and I had to tell them I don't work here. And I was like, oh, of course that would happen to you, because he's like the sweetest man in our office that just probably was like, well, sure, I can help you find that without having the heart to be like, oh, no, I don't work here.
Yeah, I actually don't work here. I just match them. Yeah, no, it's so funny. I worked there for about 7 years from when I was 16 to 23, and I actually got to be a manager there, which was so awesome, and it'll come full circle, I promise. Mm-hmm. But I was sitting in my nutrition class, and I kind of was like, I kind of miss the business side of the chaoticness of Target, which is hilarious.
No one ever.
Yeah. I want to be in retail. Who says that? But you know what? I went home and I thought on it and I was like, I don't think I want to be, you know, and God bless the people that do, but in a hospital all day or in the clinic setting, I wanted to be more of that business setting. And that is what really got me thinking about sport management. I had been looking at the business degrees and just decided, you know, sports, business, that sounds cool. So I went to join it. I talked to Nicole Farouk, who was a professor here for quite a while, and she helped me get in it, and it was such a great transition for me, and I was hooked. So I actually played volleyball at Gold Crown when I was a little girl growing up, and my dad was always my coach. So my senior year, I had to do an internship, and it was between the Nuggets and Gold Crown, and I was pretty certain I wanted to be at the Nuggets, to be frank. And I had my interview at Gold Crown, and I remember leaving and thinking, I was so comfortable there. Mm. I didn't feel uncomfortable. I didn't feel nervous. And it just felt homey, which I know is kind of a weird word to describe a job.
No,
but
that's how it should feel. It should feel comfortable. And I love hearing just the level of emotional intelligence that you had to even stop and think like, no, how does my body feel? How am I reacting to the setting? Because I think so often, especially when you've got something like a nonprofit foundation versus an NBA team, that it can send very specific biases to your brain. But to stop and say like, no, my body and my brain were happier here. And it felt, and whether that's homey or comfortable or whatever adjective we use. I think that's incredible. And as 23, 24 years old, that's fantastic that you had enough foresight and intelligence to stop and think about that.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. It was so noticeable. I knew I had to act on it.
Sure.
You know, so I did my internship there. I stayed working there part-time. I actually started working at Special Olympics the Monday following graduation.
Oh, geez. So no break.
Which was a little crazy. If you graduate, maybe take like a week or two off. So I started there the Monday following graduation, and I stayed at Gold Crown part-time just for extra cash. And then the position I interned in ended up opening up right in December 2020. And Dylan, who is also an MSU alum, called me and was like, hey, this spot's open. It's what you did for your internship. Are you interested? And the rest is history. I've been there ever since. So, and then, you know, a month in, we got hit with the pandemic.
Sure.
So it was a very interesting start to a role.
Yeah, especially your start really in the professional sphere. That's a tough deal.
Yeah.
When your entire business model is, you know, engaging with young people,
oh, yeah,
doing activities that you can't do when
the
we're on a lockdown.
The biggest possible crowds too.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I love that you mentioned Dylan. Dylan, another one of our 10 under 10 awardees. Mm-hmm. But the MSU Denver connections are very solid and they run very deep at Gold Crown, which I think is so incredible. Brandy and I were chatting about it. Obviously, I knew about Dylan, but I didn't know about Fran Baker, who's mm-hmm. on your board. And then I knew Shelby Robb. Obviously, I know Shelby very well, that she interned with you guys. She's now got herself a position up at UNC, so I don't get to see her as much. But I love that that connection is there and kind of that idea that we're going to kind of look out for and take care of and provide opportunities when we can to MSU Denver students. And I think that says a lot about the graduates, especially the sport management program. I mean, the fact that Dylan makes that phone call says, oh, no, I know the caliber of your degree. I saw the caliber of your work in the space, and I know that this is going to be a good fit. Mm-hmm. And that's a very cool deal. Have you had that opportunity yet to kind of supervise any interns or bring any new MSU Denver students over your way?
Yeah, so I get to supervise all our interns in the facilities department, which is great. So, you know, you talked about Shelby, who was so, so awesome. And we were sad to lose her for our sake, but so happy for her and her opportunity at UNC. We actually at one point had like 12 people come through our program that yeah. went through the MSU program. I need to recount these days, yeah. but it's been a great opportunity to have those interns come in and kind of see also how the program has changed. Yeah. I can't believe just in like the 5-10 years how different the program is, and it's such a testament to how much work and how hard all the professors all work to improve classes, bring in new things, you know, such as analytics. And it's just great to see the program continue to grow. And I know that when we get an intern from there, they're going to be ready to work, they're going to be prepared. And then our programs department as well also has a bunch of interns that they get. I think they get like 2 a semester, and then I typically have 1. So yeah, we have like a MSU bloodline.
Yeah,
over
it's
there
a pipeline.
Yeah.
Well, as a faculty member in sport management, I'll say you're welcome, because you're right. It has been a lot of work. No, it is an incredible department. Dr. Collis has done a fantastic job of kind of leading the charge. And we have a lot of new faculty member with great energy. Dr. Evans, who is currently serving as our presidential faculty fellow, so not in a teaching role, but has put a great mark on the program as well, especially with her experiences in professional baseball. We're seeing just so much different levels of expertise coming in that our students are benefiting from, and that has been very cool to watch.
Totally. And, you know, you talked about when we were talking about my experience going to Gold Crown versus the Nuggets, you know, I think a lot of our interns kind of come in with the same viewpoint of like, I want to be a GM of the Colorado Rockies. And it's like, that's a great aspiration. Truly it is. But we all have to start somewhere. And I think they come into recreation and youth sports and they're like, wait a second, like, I didn't really know
that this is an industry.
That this was a thing. Right. And then it turns out you get a lot of different things that you wouldn't get maybe in those major leagues. So I think a lot of our interns come in at first just kind of being like, okay, I have to get my hours out. I'm going to this little dinky place in Lakewood that runs youth sports. And they end up leaving like, I want a job in recreation, or that was really eye-opening to what I want to do in marketing, or, you know, other areas that we have. Working in nonprofit, you have to wear so many different hats. So I think it gives them that opportunity as well. And it's really fun to talk to them about it as they go through the program of, hey, what are you noticing? Or what did you get that you might have not thought you would get? Or just their viewpoints on all of that.
Yeah, the growth is tremendous. I think you get that bias oftentimes. I got my master's degree in sport management, and that was back in 07, when it still wasn't really a widely known major. It was kind of like, oh, that's the major you got because you were a graduate assistant coach, and that mm-hmm. was what they threw you in. And it's like, yeah, partially that's true. I'm not going to lie about it. But now it is a full-blown industry, and people are going to school to be athletic directors. It used to be that you were an AD. Like, you look at Joan McDermott, who's here for years because she was a volleyball coach and a softball coach for 30 years. And when you're done coaching and you don't want to be on that in that space anymore, you became an AD. Now there's people that go to school to become an athletic director. And so I think there's been a big shift in that. And the understanding. But in 2007, as a sport management degree, people are always like, oh, so you're going to go work in professional sports?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, no, zero interest in that. Thank you for thinking that that's a possibility. And my degree was actually recreation and sport management. So we had a bunch of classmates that were city park people and club sports people and all of that stuff, because it's an entire industry you don't know. And so I'm loving that we're seeing our students who maybe are coming in with a bias of like Division I athletics mm-hmm. or professional sports going, oh, no, sports is actually a multi-billion dollar industry before we even get to the collegiate level.
Yeah.
Even when I think about how I could spend an entire podcast just bitching about club sports in general.
Oh, yeah.
Because the travel ball programs, the club programs have gotten out of control in terms of what the economic piece of it all.
Totally. Yeah.
And I just want to say, can we just educate parents and say, save the money for school? Let's figure out a new system. Let's just break the system, find a new way for kids to have experiences to grow. And especially as youth sports, I'm a huge advocate that everyone should be playing youth sports in some way, shape, or form, wherever, whoever, whatever team, whatever place they want to play them. I don't care. As a kid, that I played ice hockey with boys and basketball with boys and baseball till they said, oh, there's a softball team. I don't care who's playing where when we're talking about youth sports. Because we're learning how to be people. We're learning how to be good citizens. We're learning how to socialize. We talked about how to win, how to lose, how to lead, how to follow, how to be on time.
Yes.
How to have accountability and integrity and be like, yeah, no, I didn't actually touch that line when we were running lines because I was tired. Mm-hmm. Right? And understand that there's consequences. We understand accountability. And so I just want to say, let's break the system. Let's create something new where we don't have to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars mm-hmm. to be in that place so we can save that money because the reality is the cost of education, higher education, is going through the roof. Mm-hmm. Props to MSU Denver for keeping it affordable, but a lot of other places aren't happening there, right? So save that money, still get those experiences, and then you can actually choose the school that you want to compete at and you want to get an education at based on the fit.
Absolutely. You know,
so can we just make that happen?
Yeah, right? Let's put it into practice now. You know, two great points that you made is just the price, obviously. Both my parents, to be candid, worked two jobs so that I could play club volleyball. I played from 12 to 18, and I got a lot different timing than my sisters. They both only played 1 year. But when you're 6 years younger, you grow up playing it. And so my parents did whatever they had to do. And it makes me emotional that they put in that much time and work to make sure that I could do what I wanted to do in hopes of getting a scholarship. The other point of that really is our focus at Gold Crown, to be quite honest, is anyone that wants to play should be able to play regardless of money. Specifically after COVID kind of hit. COVID was a hard time for everybody, but if you were already struggling financially and then now with inflation, everything is so just out of control price-wise. Gold Crown has always been built on the premise of if you need a scholarship, you will not be turned away for it. And we have been giving away tens of thousands of scholarships every year. It doesn't matter how much you make. If you need a scholarship, you instantly get it. There's no really questions asked, to be frank. It's like, hey, what's your name and phone number? But that's really right. And that's how it should be. You know, kids should be able to play sports without having to worry about thousands and thousands of dollars. And Ray and Bill, who were the founders of Gold Crown, really wanted to put that in motion. You know, fun fact, Gold Crown actually started in MSU's gym.
I did know that.
Yes. So Ray Baker, who is one of our co-founders, there were no girls camps for girls basketball. So he went to Bill and said, hey,
kids like me played with the men with the boys until like seventh grade when they were like, fine, I guess we'll make a girls league.
Yes. Yeah. I guess we'll have those girls in the gym. Yes. You know, it's called Hanslick Camp. It started here originally in the MSU gym, which is somehow, some way, everything is connected between Gold Crown and Metro in my life. And it's just so awesome. It's really fun. But it started here and then it expanded to different high schools. And then in the 2000s, they decided to open our building. And it's been nothing short of such a great opportunity for kids to go play. And I don't think a lot of people realize that we give away that many scholarships and that much money in scholarships. Sometimes we hear about quote unquote nonprofits and we're kind of bat an eye at them like, oh yeah, I'm sure you guys are making millions. And Gold Crown is truly the most nonprofit place there has ever been. Like, we would not make it without
you work
grants
for free,
and,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. You know, they are so great to staff. It's such a family company. But more importantly, they're great to the community, which is so, so important. I keep talking about COVID because I started during then, but we couldn't open for sports. So our founders got together and they said, okay, great. We're a food bank now and we're running food drives. And it came out of nowhere. And it was such a great opportunity to give back to the community. You know, really, anything that we can do to give back to the community, that's the main focus. And that's how sports should be used. It shouldn't be a multi-million dollar thing. It should be, hey, let's get these kids learning life lessons. Let's get adults to maybe act a little more like adults. Because I think youth sports parents, that's a whole other topic, have gotten a little crazy.
We should have a whole side podcast just that.
And just on youth sports.
Oh my gosh. I tell the story of my class all the time that when I was in my very first job, I was making the least amount of money I've ever made. And so had a bunch of other part-time gigs to just try and, you know, make beer money, basically, make ends meet. So I was a Little League umpire in Ames, Iowa over the summers, and not even like the Little League level, not the 10 to 12 year olds that actually go to the World Series. This was like the 8 to 10 year old kids. So like the little bit lower level. I have never hated a job more in my life than being a Little League umpire for 8 year old boys, because it just, and the kids were great. And I appreciated that. And the coaches, some helpful, some not, some just dads. But again, that's what youth sports should be. Everybody's just learning and growing. But if I missed a strike call, or, and it's not even missing it, it's intentionally not calling it a strike because these are 8-year-old kids mm-hmm. throwing a ball over the plate. And if it's anywhere close, we're going to call it because we're also trying to teach the game of like, no, you're not dependent on the umpire. We want you to swing the bat and learn how to do these things. So if something's 2 inches off the plate, I'm probably going to call it a strike because we're, I mean, that's part of what we were doing. I got MF'd, like genuinely MF'd by a dad sitting 3 feet right behind me because it's a little tiny fence backstop about calling a strike on his son at the bat. And I just turned around, took my mask off, and I was like, I'm sorry, sir. If you have something to say, I'm going to need you to say it right now into my eyes and into your face and in front of your son. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of looked at me, couldn't believe. And again, I'm like a 22-year-old kid and I'm probably shaking in my bones being like, I can't believe I'm doing this. And my fear in life is always getting punched in the face. I've never been punched in the face, but I'm always like, someone's going to punch me in the face one time. So, and I just looked at him and I was like, I go, this is Little League Baseball. Our entire purpose here is to teach your kid the mechanics of the game, to understand it, to build some confidence, to understand that not everything's always going to go their way, to deal with loss, be a part of a team. I said, and you are single-handedly ruining this, not just for me, not just for him, but for everybody here. I go, and I venture to say, everyone behind you. And I was like, parents, is this annoying you?
Yeah,
is this
raise what your you
want
hand.
To see? Is this what you want your kids on? And he just, you know, turned bright red and you could tell he wanted to say more things. But at that point, like, I don't think he also knew that I was a woman behind the plate because, you know, you got a mask and gear on. And so then when I'm this mm-hmm. like 23-year-old woman, I'm sure there was some sort of like, oh God, I can't MF a lady, you know?
Yeah. Good for you for doing that because I think we all have a moment and I don't play this card too often, but there is moments in sports as a woman where you do have to speak up for yourself.
Oh,
and the minute you
so
said,
many.
That you turned around. Mm-hmm. I was like, good for her for turning around.
Because
you know?
Normally I would have just ignored it. And
yeah.
I just, as somebody who, again, I will also admit to this, yells at umpires all the time.
Oh, yeah.
But I yell at collegiate umpires who, at that point, you deserve to be mm-hmm. yelled at if you do not know what you're doing. Or a major league umpire. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I'm going to yell at you guys because you're getting paid to do this. I was getting $6.50 an hour to basically create a collaborative space for young kids to experiment with sports. Right.
Yeah, you're doing this great thing and getting cussed at.
Right. But I do. So like I know that that's very what's the word I'm looking for? What's the word? Hey, Siri, what's the word when you say something, but then like the pot calling the kettle black?
Like hypocritical.
Hypocritical. There it is. I couldn't come up with it. Like it's a regular word. We've all said it.
Oh, I was
regular. Basic
nothing
English.
Fancy, nothing just fancy. English.
So I get that it is fully hypocritical that I can be like, don't yell at an umpire. And then I am notoriously going to mm-hmm. yell at an umpire.
Before we dive back into our discussion here on the Bird Talk podcast, we'd like to take a moment to spotlight the MSU Denver Alumni Outdoor Social Club. Whether you're a seasoned birder or just looking to get some fresh air, this club offers a fantastic way to reconnect with nature and network with fellow alumni. Taking leisurely hikes in beautiful locales, the Alumni Outdoor Social Club is the perfect way to lift your spirits and expand your horizons with the MSU Denver community. Don't miss out on the fun. Find more and join us at our next outdoor adventure. Find us at msudenver.edu/alumni. This episode is brought to you by the Scarecrow. They're just outstanding in their field.
Especially in the WNBA. I'm sure you've been following that at least enough to know. You may not be a diehard Caitlin Clark fan, like, you know, my Iowa blood that runs through my entire in-laws, right?
I don't know. I think everyone's a fan.
I don't know. Okay, yeah. Fair. I'll take that. And that's awesome.
How could you not be, though? How could you not be a fan right. of somebody changing the entire face of a game?
Obviously, I've been on a soapbox most of this. This entire podcast is going to be the Jamie Hurst podcast featuring Alyssa, because I can get really passionate about this stuff. But the thing that I think I appreciate so much about you and what I love is how you're doing this for our community as your profession. And you're kind of propagating these very big ideas of how important sports are and how accessible they should be through a fantastic foundation that has ties to this institution.
Thank you so much. We have so much fun.
Yeah.
That's what's important, too, is we go to work and we have a blast. We talk about every day. Like, could you imagine working somewhere else? Literally every day we talk about that. And I think part of that comes from your office culture and mm-hmm. your leadership. For those of you that don't know Bill, he is an absolute comedian. He is the funniest person on earth. He really is, without even trying to be. And I think when you have leadership from the top down that is easygoing and supportive and all of that, you know, it makes it so much easier. But it's also easy to have fun and be happy when you're doing these great things, right? We have kids that come in every day and play. We have a lot of groups that don't get space elsewhere, such as Special Olympics. We're talking to them today about, hey, what space do you need for state basketball? What can we do to help you with regionals? They wouldn't have a space, or they would have to go pay large sums of money to get a space. So we love hosting those groups anywhere from Easter SEALs. We have people that come in that might have had a stroke or some kind of neurological disability where they come in and they just walk around in the wintertime because they might not have access to a gym. Yep. It's not safe for them to walk outside. Mm-hmm. So they come to Gold Crown and walk around. So it's easy to be happy when you're able to give back. And it's such easy things of like, hey, we can just open our doors and help these groups. And that's a huge thing that Dylan and I have been encouraged to do and really focus on is who else can we serve and how do we get more involved? We have Jeffco Adaptive there all the time, NSCD, all of those types of groups. We want more. And if you need space, like, let us know. We're happy to work something out. And, you know, different ages too. Can we help younger kids? We just got, this is the big dilemma in a good way at Gold Crown right now. We just got life-changing 9-foot hoop adjustments. We used to have to lift like 50-pound hoops onto the other hoops. I'm not sure if any, if that makes sense or if you've seen that, but they were just little attachments. And for those of you who don't know Dylan, he's like a 7-foot tall man. Like, he can just stand on the ground and do it. For me to do it, it probably takes like 2 hours to get one attachment and we have to do 12. So, you know, he would have to do all of them and our staff would have to do all of them. And now we recently just got like this little twist mechanism that does it for us. So now we're able to serve even younger kids. They can go down to 8 feet. So we can start at first and second grade. So I say all that 5-minute long story to just say, you know, we're always looking for different communities to serve and how we can be of help. And like I said, it's just easy. I know I keep repeating it, but it's easy to be happy when you're able to help people and be a part of it and be supported by such amazing leadership.
There's so much to be said about being aligned with the mission of your organization. And as somebody that has never worked anywhere other than nonprofit and a summer as a Little League official, I've only ever worked in higher education and in kind of that nonprofit space. For me, mission alignment has always been a fundamental tenet for where do I want to work and how do I want to make an impact in this world. I think it's harder when you're in the corporate space, I would venture to say, again, having never been there, that there might not always be a true feeling of that mission alignment because sometimes it's just a job or sometimes it's a company that might have a great mission, but the output and the work is different than what they're trying to create as cultural values and norms for their organization. But what I love about the nonprofit space, and I think you said it perfectly, is that it's easy to have fun and it's easy to love what you do when you have that alignment. And I love to hear that it starts from the top because that, as we know, it can be an entirely different environment if that leadership is not setting the tone in that space.
Absolutely. It's nothing but supportive really at Gold Crown and everybody. It's like weird if you don't work there for 25 plus years. Like sure. That's kind of you're the oddball out if you haven't
had
that.
How dare you?
Yeah, right? So it's really cool to see that everyone has been there and it's no coincidence why you get treated and you treat your employees wonderful. And in return, they stay forever and love it. And for a lot of people there, it's not, and including me, it's not just a job. Like, it's something you enjoy and want to go to. And it's really fun. It's just a great, great job. I love it. So it's also easy when you get to put all the things together and see the immediate reaction, right? So for example, when I put together events, like, I pretty immediately get
the gratification
of seeing the kids come in and have this event. Or even just I have a staff of about 15 kids that are 14 through 18 that work in our concession stand. Our concession stand is also like a mini restaurant, to be frank. Like, concessions is a very light term I'm using.
Sure.
It actually is like a small restaurant. And these kids, you know, they come in as 14-year-olds who can't even have a conversation half the time because they're so shy and not sure what to do in life. And they leave as 18-year-olds. And I have one girl who's actually getting her degree here in business. And I have one that's an engineer at DU. And they all started as 14-year-olds with not really any idea what they're doing.
Yeah.
So my point in saying that is our slogan is preparing kids for the game of life. And whether that goes for athletes or kids that are working with us, you know, I think that's our main purpose and mission is to really prepare their people. And it's not just kids, it's also parents, like mm-hmm. we talked about. We're also teaching parents how to be better parents and how to be better fans and right. coaches in any regard possible. Yeah. So
it to me, and again, that's at just the core of the power of sports and athletics is always to me, has always stood out as so much more than just mm-hmm. winning and losing. And I think this idea of preparing you for the game of life is exactly how we should frame all of our conversations about sports, especially in that youth space till we mm-hmm. get to at least through high school, because there's still yeah. so many things as we're developing as young people in our teenage years that we can really learn from through the adversity that comes in that space, through the hard work you have to put in, the mm-hmm. discipline, all of those things.
Truly. And I think the biggest, most important part of it is it's not usually through winning.
No.
It's actually through losing.
Yeah. 100%.
It's when you're at your lowest is when these great lessons come out.
It's very true. In the 20 years since I stopped playing, is that when I'm telling stories to those students or we're talking through what I wish I would have known when I was a student, any story that I do tell, it is always about one of my lowest lows.
Yeah.
It's not intentional. But it is that moment that is the most paramount decision you have to make as an athlete.
Yeah.
When you've hit that absolute low, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. First of all, you have to make the decision. Do I want to do a 180 and switch and try and move this? Or do I want to wallow in the sadness?
Yeah.
What are those feelings that stuck with me? And I think you're absolutely right. I haven't really thought of it that way. But it's the lower parts. And then the reconciliation that I had to make a change. Something about how I was approaching that situation was broken. Mm-hmm. And so now I need to adjust that. And so it's that self-admitting of like, nope, I was wrong, either in how hard I trained or what I decided to do in that moment or what I was holding on to because I thought I knew better than somebody else or, you know?
Yeah.
And then making that decision. You've just given me an aha moment here where I'm like, oh, shit, yeah, I guess all the bad stuff was really great.
So
but
true.
I just felt it, I think, for the first time in five years since graduation.
Oh, yes. You know, it's so true. And, you know, we were talking about how sports just prepare you for life.
Yeah.
You know, in the last 3 years, my family went through a pretty big tragedy. My dad got hit by a car.
Brandy told me about this.
Yeah.
So as we were prepping for your interview, I was like, okay, I go, I know all about her professional life in this. I go, well, what about her personal life? And she's like, well, dad got hit by a car. Mm-hmm. And I was like, can I bring that up on a podcast?
Yeah.
She's like, no, she talks about it. It's kind of a before and after moment.
It was. I'm very thankful she described it that way because it was a very pivotal moment in my life and my family's. And, you know, looking back, we're talking about how sports prepare you for these big things. And a lot of people would never associate that, maybe if they weren't an athlete. That was a very difficult time in my life. And not only was Metro really here for me, to be honest, you know, I think John Kitzman was like the first person that knew because it was the day before we hosted regionals and I was supposed to work and I had to call him. You know, if you've gone through something traumatic, you understand it. I think if people are listening to us and hear us like giggling and probably can tell we're smiling, like people just, when you go through something traumatic, you deal with it very differently. And if you haven't had to go through that, you know, you're probably not going to understand, you know, we're making mm-hmm. jokes and that's the way you have to handle things. Mm-hmm. I think Metro was a very, very supportive thing to me. I actually, so let me start from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I'll try and make it a little quick. It's a long one. Yeah. My dad in 2021 went for a walk. He had lost 100 pounds and was just walking and he ended up getting hit by a car. And so he has a traumatic brain injury, which is a very, very brutal recovery. If you're mm-hmm. not aware of what it is, we were given a 4% chance of survival for him. I mean, it happened on December 1st. So it was just like a really what's the word I'm looking for? It was a very unusual day because it was really hot out in December. It was like 70 degrees. So everything, you can always, I feel like when people go through tragedies, they're like, that day everything was off and I didn't know it. And now I know why. And that's kind of how it was. But yeah, it was the day before we hosted regionals, I think for the first time in 2021. And yeah, I texted John Kitzman and I said, hey, I don't think I'll be there on Thursday, but I'll probably be there on Friday. Just not even knowing, you know, at that point, we didn't know what had really happened. We just knew there was a car accident. I didn't even know he got hit by a car. It was also during a COVID spike. So it was during kind of the second wave of COVID. So we weren't even allowed in the hospital. We didn't even know what happened. Luckily and unluckily, I should say, we were finally allowed in. We could go two in at a time and we were able to actually hear, okay, like this is what happened. This is what the recovery is going to be. And by that, I mean, no one really told us what was going to happen
right.
by no fault of doctors.
They don't know.
So busy. They don't know. Everyone's brain responds so differently to things. So yeah, he spent almost 18 months in different hospitals. He went to Craig, which mm-hmm. is such a wonderful, it's actually the number one neurological yeah. hospital. So he was able to go to Craig, and then he went to different rehabs and all this stuff. So it was a very difficult time, and he is still healing. He's mm-hmm. doing great now. But Metro, ironically, was just so there for me through it all. I actually ended up going to the regional final that It was 2 days later. Since it was COVID, we couldn't do anything. Only mm-hmm. one person was allowed in at a time in the hospital. And if you went, that was the only person that could go the whole day. So when something like that happens, tragedy, your brain doesn't work, and days feel yeah. like years or minutes even or seconds. And volleyball was always me and my dad's thing mm-hmm. together. Yeah. And it was very unlike my mom this day. She just looked at me and she said, I think you need to go to the game today. Mm-hmm. I think you need to go to the game. And that was just, she normally would have never said that, you sure. know? And so I called my friends and we went to the game. And how awkward, first of all, hey, John, I'm not going to see you for a few weeks, walks in and watches the game. But
right. I'm not going to work. I'm actually just here to
yeah,
watch.
Yeah, oh, sorry. But, you know, I walked in and it wasn't just John and everyone being supportive. You know, Jenny and Amy literally stopped warm up to come up to me. The parents on the team of kids I didn't even play with were coming up to me. And, you know, again, it just shows Metro is such a impactful place to be with the community. But yeah, it was such a pivotal moment. When you go through something like that, you obviously should go to therapy, like most people should. If you don't go to therapy, I'm very a huge advocate for going to therapy.
This entire podcast is always about, and you should go to therapy.
Yes. So yeah, that should be the slogan. Yeah.
You should go to therapy.
Brought to you by Dr. Pepper.
So I lost my dad about almost 2 years ago, about a year and a half ago. And I do all the commentary and do the play-by-play for mm-hmm. softball. And so I was on my way down to campus to come to a game, and I got a phone call from my mom that my dad had passed. And so it's just, you know, you're in that shock, you're in that moment, you're not thinking right. The first phone call I made was to Eric Lansing to tell him I wasn't going to make it to the game to call yeah. because my dad had died. Oh. And he was just like, bless Eric, who I adore more yeah. than anything. But he was just like, oh God, what can I was like, oh no, I'm just letting you know because I'm not going to be there. And my call time's in 30 minutes. And so you're going to need someone to call the game or just tell people there's not going to be a broadcaster. Mm-hmm. I didn't call my wife. I called Eric Lansing,
yeah.
MSU Denver Athletics. And so
the MSU grief group apparently right? is what it should be called.
And the craziest part is like after that. And then I called my boss here. Mm-hmm. So like I called two MSU Denver people before. And this was a Saturday too. But and again, we are very fortunate here as well that I just have a fantastic leadership here at Advancement. And so I called my boss, Christine Marcus Hudson, mm-hmm. and I said the same thing. I was like, Christine, my dad just passed. I have no idea what this means. And so I'm just letting you know, I'm probably not going to be in on Monday. Mm-hmm. And I even think I said probably not, but yeah. I'll let you know. And she was like, no, sweetheart, you're not going to be in on Monday. And in fact, I'm not going to see you all week. What are you doing right now? Are you safe? You know, very motherly, which was fantastic. And so I went up to thankfully, my parents were just up in Windsor. So mm-hmm. really tough hour drive because yeah. you're in that like, oh my God, this is a defining, mm-hmm. there is a before. This happened and now there's an after. Get yourself there, let us know what you need. And then that was fantastic. So then I finally get around to calling my wife to be like, hey, and she's supposed to be coaching this game, right? Yeah. So she's probably in the cages throwing warmups, throwing BP. And she's like, Eric just told me, or maybe even John, because I think Eric told John, and John just told me your dad died. And I was like, yeah, she's like, I'm on my way. I was like, no, coach your game. There's nothing you can do. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no difference. I don't even know what I'm going to do when yeah. I get there other than just be with my brother, sister, and my mom and like, you know, figure this out. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's absolutely amazing that our first calls
were to Metro.
We're to Metro yeah. people in like, and not just in a like, oh, logistical way. Sure, I'm being a responsible adult telling you I'm not going to show up for some shift that I have, but also then the compassion that came yeah. out of those. Like my first two calls were to MSU Denver mm-hmm. people that I care deeply about, who I know care deeply about me and an organization. There's very few people that the first thing they're thinking about when they have a tragedy, especially with their father, their mother, mm-hmm. something in that space, they're thinking about calling mm-hmm. a place that they work.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
I think that says a lot about this institution and what it does for its people.
Oh, I'm so sorry you went through that. And Eric, out of all people,
I'm more sorry for Eric because I think I caught Eric so off guard. Oh. Because there's two times that I've seen Eric super uncomfortable. One was when I cussed on air and he had to like be like, Jamie.
I've heard this story actually. I think he told me.
Yeah, and he had to like, okay, so we need to sit down and we need to talk. And I'm very understanding of the dynamic uh-huh. too. He is my boss in that situation. But then in every other situation, I'm at a different level than mm-hmm. he is. And so I know we've talked about this thing. They go, no, Eric, you're my boss. You need to treat me the same way you would treat any other commentator. And don't give me slack mm-hmm. because I have a different level in my daytime job or because my wife's the coach. Like, no. And so he had to, and I could tell he was so uncomfortable and be like, so we got to talk about what you did. And, you know, and then the second time was when I dumped on him that my dad died. And then he was just like, oh, my God. And I was like, I don't need anything. I'm just telling you, someone else needs to get on the air.
Yeah. You know what's so ironic about that, too, is Eric wants me to do
you the should. Broadcast. It is so fun.
I told him no, because I know I'll cuss. And I straight up said, like, Eric, I cannot control my thoughts. And not even in a bad way. Like, even at the like, score table, you can great. See me, like, jump up and down sometimes. Yeah. And it's because I can't control it. Mm-hmm. So I keep telling him, like, maybe in a couple years we'll get to that when I'm a little more removed. But I can't. I get it. Bleed Metro.
What's great, though, is I'm a hometown caller, too. I'm fair in terms of, like, and I celebrate the other team stuff, too. When they have, I remember a game earlier this season where I forget who we were playing, but their pitcher was just lights out and we couldn't touch her. And I was nothing but complimentary about, you guys want a pitching clinic on how to pitch?
Yeah.
Watch this today. And so, like, I am so fair because all the athletes need to have their share of that space. But when our girls hit a home run, I'm going through the roof.
You got it.
When is this? Or if we make an error, that's not what we needed. Yeah. But a great hit, a great job, you know, like, whatever. The only people I'm really not at all nice to are officials. So if you ever listen to me commentate, I'm always like, and that one again called a ball, still not quite understanding where that's missing. So like, I'm sure I am the RMAX like least favorite commentator because I'm so mean on some of the like, well, no, I'm just going to point out that shouldn't have happened.
Oh yeah.
That was clear. Open. There's the replay. Yep. So she was safe. So oops.
It's fair though. You know, they're it human
is.
Too.
So my encouragement to you to give it a whirl because it is very fun. It has kept me engaged with the sport that made me who I was. And you know, you get further away from it. It's great being a spectator. But you feel a little bit more bought in because you're getting to know the stories about the girls and then you're talking through this. And I think especially the lens of somebody that played and played for that program, you're able to talk through what's going on behind the scenes, which is what I've heard from our parents of our student athletes that listen. It's just like what they love. They're like things that our kids don't share with us. They don't talk to us about what happened at practice and why they're thinking this and what the pillars are that are leading to this and what our inning by inning goals are. So they don't go through that. And as a commentator, you can kind of bring that to them. And that's pretty fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, and Eric as a leader is just so amazing. So I know he'd be great to work with. But Eric, if you're listening, get the beep button ready for me if you want me on air.
That's it.
So. All in good ways.
All in good ways. So back to you, because this is your podcast.
It's crazy. Such a terrible thing can bring such things to light. Yeah. And I think going to therapy and, you know, just seeing my dad recover and how much hard work he put in. And it was a very pivotal moment. I know I keep saying that, but it really changed me and my family. And, you know, I'm so proud of my dad and how far he's come, and he's doing great now. He works really hard to recover. But you think about these hard moments in your life, like, I'm not getting playing time. And you think that's the worst thing that could happen when you're 19.
Right.
My mom and I were just talking about this. And then you like actually have a real life situation that's a little more eye opening. And it's interesting, though, how those smaller lessons did prepare you in some ways that you didn't even know of until later. Yeah, I've just been so grateful for Metro and just thankful to God and our family for everything that we've been able to recover from and my dad and his journey. And it's been very impactful on me. So I know he'll listen to this too. So if you're listening, Dad, I'm proud of you. Andy's an alum.
I know.
Meep.
Bring it in. Well, I appreciate you sharing that. I know I'm at a place now where... very thoughtful approach to losing a parent. It's a challenging space. The hard part is we're all going to deal with it, right? So like, I'm not alone in this. And there's been friends of mine that have lost their parents before I did. And so I've had a lot of great mentors in that space of like, here's how you're going to deal with it. I mean, Brandy, since I've known Brandy, she has lost both of her parents. And so we've talked through that. We had another gentleman that I worked on staff here with for a long time, Sean Keller. He was one of the first people to reach out to me when he heard, because he's like, well, welcome to the club. It's the club you never wanted to be a part of, but let me just tell you how it is, you know?
Yeah.
One positive aspect of tragedy is that you do see the support and the humanity of people coming back out. And then time is just the only other thing that starts to give you that space and therapy, right? To start processing those things. So I'm fortunate at a place now where my memories have almost been kind of recoded so that it's all the positive things. And so I find myself oftentimes saying things to my mom and she's like, I've never heard that story. Why have you never done that? And for some reason, all the things like the little childhood stuff My dad loved sports. He wasn't ever an athlete. He always joked that he was the editor of the sports section of the newspaper in high school, but still like athletic enough. Like we would play catch, he could whatever, but he never actually played sports. And so since I was the only one that really kind of did, I think it was fun for him to explore that with me. But there's so many like little one-off things, like times that I just remember him like sneaking me out of bed to listen to the end of a Dodger game because I was told I needed to go to bed. But he's like, no, this is a really important game. You got to listen to Vin Scully call this. Or the times he would tell my mom we were going somewhere and he would take me to Landry's, which was the sporting goods store like in our little town, and get my glove relaced and all this. And he'd be like, oh no, we're running to whatever. And I'm sure my mom kind of knew that he was, it's not like he was lying to her, but I think he made it look like, oh, it's the secret that we're doing. You know, so like it's all those memories that I have now that just seem so much more delightful than thinking about the hard things, right? I appreciate you giving kind of the background of like, yeah, we're joking and we're smiling and we're laughing as we're talking about these really shitty things that happen to us. But I think after a certain point in time, it's one of those, you can't think of the death of a parent as a shitty thing that happened to you, right? It's just life. It's just what it is. It happens to have come at a time when I felt like I probably had more time and could have had more memories. And so it brings up all of those things. But his death didn't happen to me.
Yeah.
His death just happened. And I am in that existence of like, yep, now I got to cope with that and deal with it. And me and my siblings are doing that very differently. Even my mom has come through ebb and flows in the last couple of years. But I am at a point where the choice to think through the happy stuff and the choice to think about, well, what can we do to make that a before and this is an after that is a positive thing, it has to be active and it has to be practiced. And so some of that is even with the way that we talk about it. I always make sure that when I'm having a conversation about my dad, if I'm going to say something crappy about it, because not everything's great with your parents, right? Kids are teenagers at some point. Guaranteed things are horrible at some point, right? That I always make sure that I'm couching, even as simple as it sounds, like one negative thing that I'm thinking about or one regret that I have with two positive things, or making sure that I'm telling a story that makes me smile. And if I can physically control my smiling, then I'm going to be happier, right? So I do appreciate that you at least acknowledge that, because I think at the beginning too, I could tell even just in the pragmatic way, and I'm a very pragmatic, logical, what do I need to do next thinker? And that's how a lot of his passing was for me, because there's also a lot of things to do.
Yeah,
there was figuring out the estate and dealing. And as the person with the law degree in the family, it's like, oh, you'll figure all that out. And it's like, but okay, when am I supposed to grieve in this, right? And so it was a very pragmatic approach for me in grief. And I'm sure probably in another 3 years, there'll be one day where I just lose my shit and I'll be like, oh, there it all is.
Yeah. isn't that the lovely thing about grief is that it's never done. And,
no.
You know, I love that you talked about how like one of the vehicles for you and your dad's love was sports, or sports was the vehicle for that, like getting your glove fixed and all of that. And isn't that so funny? I felt the same way of like when I came to that game 2 days later. At that point, we didn't know if my dad was going to live or if he was going to pass away. He was on life support and there was nothing I could do. And I remember being like, I need to be at volleyball.
And it isn't crazy. The world works and the universe speaks in special ways.
And I knew my dad would want me to be there, especially, you know, obviously if the hospitals were open and it wasn't COVID, I would have been with my dad. But I just knew that was me and my dad's thing, was volleyball. And I knew I need to go to that game and get out of the house and take care of myself, which is funny that going to a game is taking care of myself. You know, one of my dad's first outings, he probably was, let's see, this was about 9 months post-accident. Yeah, because it would have been the alumni game.
Yeah.
That was his first outing out of his rehab, and he hadn't been out, at least like with our family. He had been with the therapist, but his first outing was to come to my alumni game.
Very
and
cool.
It was very special for our family to, again, have this sports vehicle. I don't know why I'm using that
first. That's okay. This SUV.
Yeah. Yeah, geez Louise. It was very cool to have sports and volleyball be kind of that reason of like, hey, this is such a fun thing that our families always love. Why not use it as his therapy for the day and get him here? And he's still such a huge fan. He always asks how the girls are doing and loves watching all the games and still follows very closely, which is nice. But it is funny to think, wow, sports – really, you know, people think they're just such this simple thing of like hitting
winning
a ball,
and losing,
winning and losing.
Ball,
and it's so much more than that. And the lessons and relationships and, you know, not just with your teammates, but how it brings you closer to your coaches and your family and how those people support you when you're going through terrible, tough times and vice versa.
Okay. We're going to wrap up with rapid fire. Whatever you're I'll say it again. First question, what is your favorite MSU Denver memory?
Oh my gosh, that's such a hard one. What a good question.
Was it that time you lost and you were broken? And
I actually do. I do have like a funny one of when we lost, but I think it's like a team one.
That's fine. You keep that.
I'm trying to think of like what would be. I have so many. You know, I think a big one for me would be when we broke a curse, mm-hmm. would be my junior year of volleyball. And it was Jenny's first year coaching. And we had gone undefeated. We had an amazing team that year. I think we had 3 All-Americans that year. And we got to go to Angelo State, which I don't know. I'm sure no one's been there. It's a very small school in the middle of nowhere, but their facility is amazing. It is such a very, very cool stadium that you get to play in. And it's just a really cool environment for regionals. And so we were there. And the curse at that point was that we would not get past first round. Mm-hmm. I think it had been like 10 plus years. And, you know, to travel to San Angelo is quite the trip. And then to lose is it's very hard. So we had had 2 years of losing the first round when I was there, and we finally broke the curse. And I remember everyone felt like this collective sigh of relief of like this, oh my gosh, the curse, it's over. And I think just having that be like Jenny's first year, we had such a good group. Everyone was so, so close that year. That year when Jenny came in, we also had like, we did have a cultural reset. You know, there were some things. We had a dry season, which we had never done before, stuff like that, where our team did end up getting closer because we were always together. It was very bought in, I should say. I just remember like this collective, like, oh my God, we did it. We got past the first round and then we got past the second round. Mm-hmm. And then it was really cool to be the last team, one of the last teams standing on the last day. Just, I remember we would go to McAllister's to eat all the time and just being like, wow, we really did this. Like we're in the suite 16. And that was a really great memory. And I think that was a really great group my junior year. Yeah.
That's very cool. All right. What does it mean to you to be a roadrunner?
I think it means perseverance is a big one. And, you know, I think a lot of people that have been on the podcast always talk about how the community and students at Metro really just persevere. You know, there's single moms, there's single parents, there are people that are older coming back to get their degree. Maybe they're not as traditional. I think all the students here just embody that and all the staff. You know, everybody really has a different story and is able to share that with everyone around them and be able to support each other. And I think MSU is just really cool. It's really fun to have people at all different walks of life. I always talk to my interns about this, and it's no shade to them, but you know, it is very different than like a CU Boulder where maybe half the class went to a frat party last night on a Wednesday night, right? These people are working in hospitals. They're taking care of their family, their kids. It's just such a different environment. You know, I know in Amy's, she was laughing, saying like, I was so thankful for the moms and dads that would ask the questions in class because she was shy. And it's so true. I think I loved having different ages in my classes. I thought it brought something so extra special to it because it's a whole different point of view. Everyone here just has a very different lifestyle. And I think that's what brings so much to MSU. And I think perseverance is the perfect word for MSU and MSU students, is they just really are here to get the job done and get their degree and excel. And it's really cool to have everyone with all these different stories.
Yeah, that's awesome. I appreciated, as an older student in my MSU Denver classes, even though I was the old lady in the room, I never felt like that was, oh, great, we got an old lady. It was more like, awesome, what do you know that we don't know? You know, and so that part was very cool.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved having different ages.
And the kids, you know, they kept me young.
Yeah, you are young.
All right, so the last one. If you could put a billboard on campus with a piece of advice for all students to see, what would it say?
Oh, I like that question. We can put it on Colfax next to the, what is it, softball fields?
Oh, yeah, right on the highway.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that I would tell people is just to enjoy it. I think school can be one of those things that's so hard. It can be really hard to enjoy things when you're in it. And then you look back years later and you're like, I missed it while it was happening. And I think that's a really big lesson, you know, through volleyball that I learned is to enjoy things when you're in it, even if it's not the best. And I think that's something my dad's accident also taught me is like these little glimpses of hope and happiness, like enjoy those while you can. You know, things aren't always going to be perfect, but that doesn't mean that you can't enjoy it too. I think there's plenty of things going on right now across the world politically, and it's an election year and people are not nice to each other anymore. They're really not. And it's broadcasted 24/7 on our phones. And I think it's really hard to live in today's society. And I think it's hard sometimes to remember life is good, even if it's not always great. The best it could be. Yeah. If it's not great, it's still good and we're still here. And I think I would just encourage students, you know, like take a moment to really enjoy what you're doing for yourself and to be proud of yourself. I think that's the biggest thing is I think sometimes people think it's weird to be proud of yourself and it's not. I think it comes off as cocky or thinking you're better than people. And it's not like we should all be so proud of these strides, whether it's you're going to school or you're going to therapy or anything you're doing. Like if you're trying to better yourself, you should be proud of that. And don't be afraid to be loud about it either, you know? So I would really encourage all the students here to just be proud of yourself and enjoy the moment. And, you know, in 10 years when you're working, you're going to miss being downtown and being able to walk across the street. And for us, it was like the market, going to the market to get food or, you know, if you're not realizing it, you're going to miss it. Just being present is so important. And I think, you know, back to Jenny Glenn, she rules in my head, I swear. That was something she always told us was really be present and like, let's enjoy this. And it's only going to be here for so long. So you have to cherish it while you're in it.
I love that. I think it grounds us in the idea that life will ebb and flow. But the one thing we do have control over is how we respond to it. And so if we're choosing to be proud and we're choosing to find enjoyment and we're choosing to persevere, then we're in a place where we can expect greater outcomes, right? Yeah. And then we can be really proud of ourselves in that space.
It's true. You just have to be there for yourself, I think, is the biggest thing. And, you know, turn your phone off and stay away from some of the negativity sometimes. Yeah.
Surround yourself with the communities that that build you up, right? And we talk a lot about in this podcast that our central theme, obviously, next to therapy is also community.
And Dr. Pepper.
And Dr. Pepper and sports. Well, Alyssa, this was awesome. I could have talked for many more hours. I love anytime we get to hear from our alums, but especially our student athletes that still have such a great passion for the sports that they participated in, can see the value of all of the hard work of many years of blood, sweat, and tears. And now to see, I think, the full circle for you that you are investing and doubling down in that space, providing opportunities for our youth at the Gold Crown Foundation is just freaking awesome.
Thank
you for doing good work. Thank you for coming and sharing your story with us. For everybody who has been listening and you need a place, you heard Alyssa say it, if you're needing a place to facilitate and create some great opportunities for engagement for our young people, please reach out to her because the Gold Crown Foundation is here to serve. That's what they do.
Yeah.
And you are a perfect servant for them. And it has been very, very fun to get to talk to you and get to learn a little bit more about you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so nice being here. And, you know, I just want to say thank you to Metro. And without Metro, none of this would be possible. So I'm just so appreciative of everyone here.
That's awesome. We'll see you next month. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Bird Talk, special accommodation provided by University Advancement. Thank you to Ruby Matheny, Brandy Rideout, production provided by David Sharman, and I'm your host, Jamie Hurst. Keep running, Roadies.